welcome to episode 509 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a spotlight episode, and today I'm going to be spotlighting Extermination. It's the five-issue miniseries set in the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe. It's from writer Ed Brisson. The art is by Pepe Larraz. We have colors by Marte Garcia, letters by Joe Sabino, and amazing covers by, or regular covers, I should say, by Mark Brooks, because there are some variant covers, I believe, by Mike Hawthorne and Frank Cho. So I'm going to just read the inside of the front cover here. You know, Marvel likes to put their few little paragraphs in there to kind of tell people what's going on, and then I'll kind of add some of my own details here. But just to give you an idea, if you weren't with us for the Extermination Part 1 of 5 episode, which I believe I put out last Tuesday, and actually Part 3 comes out, I think, this Wednesday. So we'll be talking about that the first Tuesday of October, because the next Tuesday following this, we're going to talk about Return of Wolverine, number 1. So now that I think about it, I think Return of Wolverine is the X book that's coming out this Wednesday, the 19th, and then Extermination 3 comes out on the 26th of September. I'm not 100% on that, but I am 100% that we're covering Return of Wolverine number 1 on next Tuesday's Spotlight episode, and we will cover Extermination number 3 on the following Tuesday's Spotlight episode. So, genetically gifted with uncanny abilities, mutants are believed to be the next stage of human evolution. While the world hates and fears them, teams of mutant heroes known as the X-Men use their powers for good and spread a positive image of mutant kind. So that's kind of just a generic, these are who the X-Men are. I think we probably all know that, or at least you should if you're listening to this podcast, or you've seen any of the X-Men movies. The X-Men have had a long history in Marvel Comics, and things haven't always gone well. So that ties into the next part here. Believing the X-Men had lost their way, Beast, also known as Hank McCoy, used time travel technology to bring his younger self and the other four first five students of Charles Xavier forward in time to the present to inspire the X-Men and set the future right. So that's Cyclops, aka Scott Summers, Marvel Girl, also known as Jean Grey, Iceman, Bobby Drake, Angel, aka Warren Worthington III. So since those five have been here, although their mission of hope and mutant aid remains the same, the original five X-Men adventures in the present have left them irrevocably changed. They've seen a lot. Obviously, they were brought from the 60s. They were brought forward, I believe, in 2009. Present day in the comics, I don't think that if you were to try to nail down a timeline that it's really been nearly 10 years that they've been here. In actual comic book time, it's probably only been a couple of years. But clearly, being brought forward 50 years, you're going to see a lot. The world's changed a lot in the last 50 years, especially as it pertains to the Marvel comic book world. So specifically what's happened in this series so far, and we do know Extermination is supposed to finally resolve, what do we do with these kids? In the back of Extermination Issue 1, Ed Brisson wrote a kind of a little essay giving his kind of version of how he came on the book and got invited to tell the story of these five. And it was a Marvel Writers Summit, and the question was always, okay, we've brought these kids forward. We thought it was a good idea at the time, but eventually we need to send them back. Like, what do we do? What do we do? And Ed Brisson apparently had the best idea, or the idea that the higher-ups at Marvel liked the most, and this is that story, Extermination. It's that event that's going to resolve these young version of the original five. I mean, currently we've got two Angels, two Jean Greys, two Beasts, and two Icemen. The older Cyclops is dead, but I actually don't expect that to be the case by the end of the series, but we'll see if I'm right. Anyway, in the first issue, we saw Ahab, a mutant hunter from the future, a possible future, the future that Phoenix, Rachel Summers, or Rachel Gray, is from. Ahab is a mutant hunter, and Phoenix was one of his hounds in that alternate future. This is the same alternate future whose story was told in Days of Future Past, both the comic and the movie. So Ahab is that mutant hunter. He's attacked Cyclops and Bloodstorm in the first issue and actually killed Bloodstorm. Cyclops managed to drive Ahab and his hounds away, but it wasn't in time for Cyclops to save Bloodstorm. Meanwhile, elsewhere in the first issue, a mysterious hooded figure abducted Iceman and executed Cable. The X-Men had little time to mourn before organizing their response. They're assuming Ahab was responsible for both attacks, but unbeknownst to the X-Men, Cable's killer is, and we saw this on the last page of issue one, spoilers if you haven't read it. If you don't want it to be spoiled, if you don't want to know who killed Cable, then go and read the issue and then come back and listen to the rest of the podcast. If you don't mind being spoiled, then I'm going to tell you. The Cable was killed by a younger version of himself, a younger Cable, who basically, from what I kind of was reading between the lines, from what he told his older counterpart, was like, you know this is not right. You know having these younger version of the X-Men here in this time is not what you need to be doing. You should have sent them back a long time ago. If you'd done your job, I wouldn't have to do what I'm about to do. And he like shoots Cable dead, like right there. It gives them both barrels. So that's kind of where issue two picks up. We're in Passaic, New Jersey. In a grocery store, we see a voice from off-panel say, Calvin Rankin. For those that don't know, Calvin Rankin is the Mimic. A long, 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 long time ago, he was introduced in the Uncanny X-Men. I think it might have been actually before it was even called Uncanny X-Men. It was just X-Men. Created by Stanley and Jack Kirby, I believe. And he basically has the powers of all five of the original X-Men. And he's been an X-Men over the years. He started off as kind of a villain an antagonist, but he's been an ally at times, and he shows up here. I actually don't know what he's been up to for the last few years. I've been kind of absent from the X-Men universe myself over the last few years, so I'm not 100% what he's been up to, but he's always been a character that's fascinated me from the first time I saw him way back, and I think the first time I ever saw him was an official handbook of the Marvel Universe, and I just thought it was cool that somebody would have all five powers, right? He's got the optic blasts of Cyclops. He's got wings like Angel. He's got giant hands and feet and great acrobatic ability like Hank McCoy. He's got ice abilities like Iceman, and he's got like telekinesis and limited telepathy like Jean Grey. I mean, that's just an awesome set of powers, right? Like a one-man band, so to speak. So here he's shopping in the grocery store. He hears someone call his name. He says, yep, I'm, and he starts to turn around and he's like, hey, wait a minute. And we see him shot by the younger Cable with the same kind of tranquilizer dart we saw in the neck of Iceman, Bobby Drake, the younger version in the first issue. And the younger Cable, as he stands over him, says, your services are required. Next, we see the scene shifts to the Xavier Institute for Mutant Education and Outreach. In Central Park, New York, there's a few of the students playing baseball, playing catch in the front yard. Cyclops is sitting on the steps. The young Jean Grey comes and asks if she can join him. And he kind of demurs. He's like, you know, I really just want to be alone right now, Jean. And Jean says, I know you do, Scott, but that's not what you need right now. I'll stay out of your head. I'm not going to intrude, but I'm not going to leave you alone. But I'm here if you want to talk. If not, I'm still here. And Scott just looks at her. And it's interesting the relationship these two have, because obviously the older Scott Summers and older Jean Grey, I mean, they were a couple forever in the Marvel Universe, eventually got married, had their issues, their problems, whatever. And so I always, whenever I see these two younger versions of these characters interact, that's the context, the subtext I have within my head. But again, I've been absent from the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe for a while, so I'm not 100% what this relationship is, but I can't help but think they're still Jean and Scott, just younger versions, so the feelings are still there, right? Or are they not because of different circumstances, and will they be sent back and fall in love? Will they not? It's an interesting thing to think about. It goes toward the fact that things aren't necessarily fated or you know, destined to be. It's a romantic idea we kind of have as a society and as human beings, like your one true love, and no matter circumstances, it's the person you're supposed to be with. That may not necessarily be the case for Scott and Jean, which again is a very interesting concept considering just how long it took them to get married and their long history of love and romance and relationship within the normal Marvel Universe timeline. Meanwhile, Scott goes on to ask her, how can you do that? Sit there and be so calm. Bloodstorm and Cable are dead. We don't know what happened to Bobby. And Bloodstorm was my fault. Ahab wanted me, not her. And he's really beating himself up over it. And Jean tells him, you know, it's not your fault. You can't be taking on guilt for something a madman did. Ahab killed Bloodstorm, not you. And then Scott says something that's very interesting here. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's profound, but it's, again, food for thought. So I love the way that Ed Brisson is bringing in these ideas to think about. He says, Gene, we've been fighting against this kind of thing since forever. And here we are. We've been brought to the future where our fight should have made a difference by now. But nothing's changed. We're still fighting. Only now we're dying, right? The fight back then in the 60s, it was much more rare for a comic book character to be killed. Now they do it every other week, but then they end up bringing him back. So death doesn't really have as much meaning. But it's true to think about. Like, think about the history of the X-Men, right? The long history of the X-Men, both within the Marvel Universe timeline and within like our real world. How long they've been telling stories about the X-Men, whether it's an analog for civil rights or that's how it was created or something. It's all up for debate. There's a lot of different competing theories, and even the people that created these characters and stories have given different answers at different times. So I've been researching it for our X-Men chronology that's going to start up soon. So it's kind of on my mind. So sorry if I'm digressing too much, but it's interesting to think about Scott, this young version of Scott, who's a little wise beyond his years based on everything he's been through, saying this, right? Shouldn't something have changed by now? God, we've been, you know, it's like, how long can you keep just beating your head against the wall? How long can you keep trying to push that giant boulder uphill before you get discouraged and give up? I suppose that's what makes the X-Men heroes, because against all odds, they don't give up. But I mean, he's right. It's like, how long do you have to go on fighting this fight, this fight that seems to be never ending? So meanwhile, the scene shifts inside. Shatterstar shows up and says, tell me it's not true. Cable's not been slain. And Kitty Pryde informs him that she's afraid so, that it is. And now that everyone's here, they can get started. And she kind of recaps in the last 24 hours, Bloodstorm and Cable have been killed. Iceman, the young version, is missing. And they hope that he's still alive. And the older Iceman says something interesting here. He's like, well, if the younger version of me was dead, wouldn't I have like blinked out of existence? We saw that happen when the kids first came here. The young Cyclops got killed and our Cyclops disappeared momentarily until the young Cyclops was revived and then our Cyclops reappeared. So if I'm still here, that means Bobby's still alive, right? But Beast kind of throws some cold water on that theory. He's like, you know, time paradoxes are difficult to unravel. It could be possible that him being brought forward in time and then being killed in this time period didn't necessarily make him stop being your ancestor. It when you go and start dealing with time travel, Beast is right, especially as a theory in a comic, all bets are off, right? So the fact of the matter is that at the end of the day, young Bobby could be dead, but they simply don't know. But Kitty says, you know what? We're going to go on the assumption that he's alive. And at this point, we know that Ahab claimed Scott was his target. So we've got to assume that Ahab is here to go after all the young versions of the X-Men. He tried to go after Scott. He took Bobby. And Cable's killed somebody, but we don't think that's Ahab. There's a lot of things to think about here. There's a lot of different directions that the X-Men could be pulled in. And Domino's like, well, what are we waiting for? Let's go find Ahab. And Shatterstar is fully on board with that. And this does make sense because Domino and Shatterstar are two of the characters who are closer to Cable, having been in X-Force with him. And Shatterstar even says as much. He says, Cable was a mentor to me, to many of us. But Rachel Gray says, you know, it's not that easy. Ahab can time travel, so he could be hiding in another year, another century, which would explain why he had Cable killed, because Cable might have been the one person who could have tracked him through time. Because again, the X-Men don't know about the younger version of Cable. They're assuming that Ahab was behind it, even though the young Jean Grey didn't sense Ahab there and Rachel Grey didn't sense Ahab there at the location where Cable was killed. But it doesn't mean he didn't put somebody up to it. But Rachel Grey does agree that if Ahab is here, he's after the kids. And we see, this is something I'm going to come back to later, but we see one of the newly rescued mutants who had like the albino skin that was rescued by Jean Grey, the young Jean Grey, and some of the young X-Men in the first issue. As Rachel Grey is talking, she has Old Man Logan's hand, and she says in French, "Your hand is hurt," and he shushes her. I'll come back to that later. And she says it in French again, so not everyone else may have understood what was being said. And we don't know why his hand is hurt. Just assume it's a throwaway line because she's looking at the scars where his claws pop out. Seems like a strange thing to just throw into a panel. So again, we'll come back to that in a little bit. Meanwhile, Rachel Gray is saying, these deaths are something bad, something terrible for mutant kind in the future. I've seen the future Ahab wants. Should have known he was coming here when my hound mark started to return. We've got to do everything in our power to stop him. We've got to protect young Scott, Jean, Hank, and Warren like our lives depend on it, because they possibly do. The fact that two X-Men are dead already is already too much for Rachel. And so Kitty, as the leader, suggests that they split into four teams. Each team will take one of the original five members back to their base and protect them. And by splitting up, it'll make it harder for Ahab to find them, and they'll be easier to protect. And then we get a scene where the four younger X-Men are listening, and we see Scott is not happy when he hears what Kitty has to say. And he goes stomping off as Kitty starts proposing the list of how the teams should split up. So the three other young X-Men go after Scott as he runs outside saying, Scott, they're trying to help us. And Scott says, no, they're trying to babysit us. Ahab's trying to kill us, and they want to take us off the board, put us in little hidey holes. That's what they're doing, and this is our fight. It's ours, and they're trying to keep us out of it. Bobby needs us, and we need Bobby. Without him, we can't go back. It doesn't work if it's not all of us. And Jean's trying to get his attention, saying, Scott. Scott just keeps going on his rant. They're trying to sideline us. Warren's trying to convince him otherwise. Jean's trying to interrupt, saying, Warren. And then finally she's like, shut up, both of you. Something's wrong. And before she can finish the sentence, we see that Angel Warren Worthington III is shot with one of those same tranquilizer darts in the neck, and he goes down immediately. And Scott's like, Warren, oh God, is he? And Hank McCoy B says, no, he's just unconscious. And Scott yells, Ahab, show yourself, coward. Jean's trying to get a fix on him, but she can't. She says, whoever it is, they're blocking me. I can't see him. And then Hank McCoy gets shot with the same kind of tranquilizer dart. He doesn't go down immediately, though. He pulls it out pretty quickly, but then he does fall over. And Scott says, Jean, I need you to focus. Where are the shots coming from? So Jean concentrates, and she gives Scott a direction. She says, I think I've got him. I can't see him, but I can sense that there's a void out there. There's an empty space where there should be something, but there's nothing. It's in the trees. So with that heading in his mind, Scott goes running and senses him hiding behind a tree, fires off a huge optical blast that blows up the tree and sends the assailant flying. And Scott goes up and grabs him by the robe and says, I'm going to kill you for what you did to. And as he turns him over, he sees that it's the young Cable. And he finishes his question, or his statement as a question rather than a statement of vengeance. So the young Cable kicks him and knocks off his visor, which, you know, it's 2018. Can we get a visor that'll stay on this guy? You would think by now there'd be some kind of with all this amazing technology in the Marvel Universe, can Iron Man not make him some like contact lenses or something? Because immediately he's out of the fight. A Cable kicks him in the face, knocks off the visor, goes running after or running out into the open, and Scott's left there feeling around for his visor, sending Jean a telepathic message saying, it's Cable, he's coming your way. And Jean's like, what? And sure enough, here comes the young Cable. He runs up to Warren Worthington, and Jean tells him, stop right there. I'll hurt you if I have to. I'm only giving you 3 seconds to explain yourself. And the young Cable says, nope, no talking. And she says, did you take Bobby? And despite him saying no talking, he's like, you can't be here. You've been told. You already know. You're still here. So I think, again, reading between the lines, what we're seeing from this young version of Cable is the young versions of the X-Men being brought forward in time is screwing the timeline up in a way. And that's why he doesn't want to talk to her. He doesn't want to interact with her. He's trying to keep the interaction to a minimum because he's trying to repair the damage that's being done. And even tells her, you can't be here. You already know this, but you're still here. And so Cable says, yeah, time for talking is long since passed. Body slide by two, and he takes Warren with him. As Jean's left there helpless, saying no, and then we get a voice off panel saying Jean, and it turns out it's the older Jean Grey asking, was that? And the younger says, yes, it was Cable, and the older Jean Grey is like, he looked like a kid. And I love this line from the older Bobby Drake. He says, great, more kid versions of the X-Men. What could possibly go wrong? But it is interesting that the first one that realizes that it was Cable, the first one that recognizes of the other X-Men that come running out is Jean Grey, his mother. And you can only imagine the conflicting emotions that she's feeling. You know, she thought that she lost her son, and now it turns out he may still be alive, but be a lot younger. So the younger Jean Grey says he got Angel. He hurt Hank, and the younger Cyclops is there again, asks if he's going to be okay, and Hank tells him he's unconscious, but he seems fine. I'll take him to my lab, make sure he checks it out, and Kitty says, that seals it. We need to get the kids out of here right now. We've got to split them up, and the older Jean Grey asks the younger Jean Grey to come with her to Cerebro, but it's Cerebro. I'm going to assume that that's the base of the X-Men Red team. But again, I'm not sure on that. So, but the younger one says, no, I want to go with them. And we see Shatterstar, Domino, Thunderbird. I think it's Boom Boom and Cannonball. So I'm not sure what the connection is there that she wants to be with that particular team. Meanwhile, a little later in Hank's lab, we see the younger Hank is fine. The older Hank does confirm that because the younger Hank pulled the tranquilizer dart out so quickly, he didn't get a full dosage, and it allowed him to wake up much sooner. And then he gives him something to help with the side effects. And he also informs the older Hank informs the younger that Cable was the one behind what's going on, a younger version. So the younger Hank says, you know, he attacked us right on the front lawn of the mansion with dozens of X-Men just sitting feet away. That's pretty bold. That's pretty brazen. And the older Beast says, no, I don't really think it is. I think it's desperate. You know, I knew the older Cable well, and he was a brilliant tactician. He would never attack like this out in the open and let us know who he was and who was behind these attacks unless he was desperate. And so the younger version of Hank says, you think he killed his older self and took Bobby? And the older Beast says, well, it stands to reason. And the younger says, why would he do this? Why would he attack us? And the older Hank says, I don't know, but I have theories. And I'm sure he does, because again, remember, he was the one that was responsible for bringing these five younger X-Men forward in time. Meanwhile, at Cable's base, we see the younger version of Warren Worthington III is chained up. He's got his metal wings. I don't know why he has metal wings rather than normal wings. Again, not caught up with all the X-Men stuff for the last few years, but we do see a buzzsaw looks to be trying to cut those wings off of him as the younger Cable looks on and says, "You brought this on yourself." So again, reading between the lines here, I can only imagine that these metal wings or metal whatever they are on this younger version of Warren Worthington are from the future or from the present time. And so I'm assuming that the younger Cable is removing them because he can't send Warren back with future tech, can't send him back to the 60s with tech from the 2000s. But again, it's all speculation at this point. So meanwhile, the teams are getting ready to split up back at the X Mansion, and someone's asking Kitty, "Are you sure this is the best idea?" Everybody's splitting up, and Kitty responds, "I don't know, Logan, I'm hoping," and this is old man Logan she's talking to. But before she can even finish her sentence, we see some hounds break through the window saying, "Kill the mutants." The alarm goes off down in Hank's lab. The older says, "Well, that didn't take long." And we see Ahab there with a bunch of different hounds saying, "You think you can hide the young X-Men from me?" That Ahab, the Houndmaster, wouldn't just come directly to you and snatch them from your grasp. And there's a huge battle going on with Old Man Logan saying, "You're going to have to go through me, Peg Leg." And Rachel's actually kind of frozen. She's so shocked by the sight of seeing Ahab again. She's like, "It's really him." And once her paralysis kind of breaks, she says, "No, not again. You made a mistake coming here. I'm going to make sure you regret it, monster." And Ahab's like, "Monster? Well, that's rich coming from one of the most bloodthirsty hounds ever. Did you tell your friends how many mutants you killed in the future? How much joy you took in it?" And throws his spear, his harpoon, at Rachel. Hits her in the shoulder. And she seems to be knocked out pretty quickly. And the younger Hank McCoy manages to grab her and ask if she's okay. And Ahab answers for her, saying, "I'm not interested in killing her. It does me no benefit, gives me no advantage. Not like killing you would. Don't worry about Rachel. She'll survive. It's my other hounds you've got to worry about." And as Hank turns around, we see Old Man Logan there with the marks of a hound on his face. And he doesn't look to be himself. And obviously, Hank is very concerned. I'll say that. So, not sure why Old Man Logan was turned. Not sure what's going on. And that's why I said we'd come back to the young mutant saying, your hand looks injured, and him shushing her earlier in the book. Could something have been planted on Logan that got through his hand? Like, what was that wound? Something happened where he previously had fought and been captured, and is that where the wound came from? Like, it can't just be a throwaway line. It can't just be a coincidence that we see that weird exchange. Like, why would that be pointed out and be so obvious in the story? And then on the last page, we see that Old Man Logan is not himself. And if anybody was going to be a hound for Ahab and be a formidable foe for the X-Men, then it would probably be Logan. I mean, he's, you know, he's the best he is at what he does, right? To quote him talking about himself. I mean, maybe the older Jean Grey would have been another, but, you know, with her telepathic abilities, it might have been a lot tougher to turn her. So the stakes have definitely been ramped up here. We had a few quiet moments in the first issue. There's like maybe a couple quiet panels here. But other than that, it's nonstop action. I love the fact that the mystery of who is behind the killing of the older Cable and the kidnapping of Bobby Drake in the first issue. I'm really happy that didn't drag out, that Brisson didn't have that as like this, oh, who is it? Who is it? Who is it? For a long period of time. The X-Men already know. They're already trying to make sense of it. I mean, they know at the end of the day that Cable's a good guy, right? But I mean, he is, one of his responsibilities he feels is protecting the time stream. So it makes sense that he would be doing what he's doing. And the other thing that makes sense about it is this is a younger version, right? So he may not have the wisdom of years and the wisdom of experience. And he's just, as a lot of younger people can tend to be, very much by the rules, by the book kind of person, right? He hasn't experienced enough life to really understand that in life, there's a lot of gray area. And so that's kind of what the older Cable used as an excuse or a rationalization, if you will, or reasoning for why he allowed the younger versions of the X-Men to stay in the future. And he said as much in the first issue, like, you don't understand. They need to be here. They need to be here to inspire and to learn and to grow and to understand. We can send them back later. But clearly there's some other motivation for the younger Cable. Like, obviously something's happened to where he's now saying, I can no longer allow this to stand. I've got to go back and change things no matter what it takes, even if it means killing an older version of myself. So I do like the fact, as I said, that Brisson didn't drag that mystery out, and it gives the older Hank a chance to research and try to understand what's going on, because again, he was the one that brought this younger version of the team forward through time anyway. So you'd almost think if anybody's going to be feeling a whole bunch of guilt, it wouldn't be the young Scott Summers for Bloodstrike being killed, but it would be Hank McCoy, right? Going, if I hadn't brought these young kids, these young versions of myself forward, none of this would have ever happened. But I mean, you can second guess yourself, you know, 1,000 ways till Sunday. It doesn't really get you anywhere. But I do like the fact that, as I said, Brisson revealed it early, and it gives him a chance to try to understand what's going on. What is the younger Cable's motivation? And it may be that the younger Cable waited as long as he could, hoping that the older Cable was going to send this younger team back. But then when it got to the point where the younger Cable knew, okay, I know that Ahab is going to attack the younger X-Men at this point, I'll wait till the last moment, but then when I can't, and hope that my older version is going to do what he's supposed to do, but now I can't wait anymore because now Ahab's here, and I certainly can't let any of the younger versions of the X-Men fall into the hands of Ahab, so I've got to make my play now. And so it's almost like we have three sides, right? We have the Cable, younger Cable version, loner on his own. We've got the giant supersized team of X-Men, because it's X-Men gold and blue and red, it's all of them. And then we've also got Ahab. It's sort of a triangle, and they're all out to get each other, it seems like. But I could see the X-Men possibly working together with the younger Cable. They're never going to work with Ahab. He's always going to be a number one enemy. So, as I said, really ramped up the action in this issue. And I love that it's only a five issue miniseries. So we know we're going to get resolution relatively quickly. And by no means do I think every storyline, plot thread, everything going on with the X-Men is going to be wrapped up in this book. That's not the case at all. With the new Uncanny X-Men title coming out, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be weekly when it first launches, there's going to be plenty of room to tie up any loose ends that are left here. And I imagine between this and Return of Wolverine that we're going to have plenty of great X-Men books that kind of directly lead into that new relaunch. So I thought this was a great issue. This series, I'm really enjoying. I think it's one of the best things Marvel's putting out right now, along with Immortal Hulk. The artwork, I think I said this last time, I wasn't that familiar with Pepe Larraz's work until maybe last half of this year, but his work is really outstanding. He gives a lot of detail when needed, but other times he knows how to kind of soften things by leaving detail out, especially in faces, which actually helps his style as far as the way that his style portrays emotion. So I really enjoy the art. He does mix it up with panel layouts on the page a little bit. There's some pretty cool looking pages here, especially the page where the Hounds break through the X-Mansion's windows and the alarm goes off in Hank's lab downstairs. Those are done really, really well. I feel like the transitions from panel to panel are probably his weakest. That's not to say they're bad at all, but that's probably where he has the most room to improve. They're pretty good. I would say they're average, if not better than average, but there were a couple times where I did glance back at the previous panel just to make sure I understood. So I think that's one place where he can improve, but for the most part, his art is really spectacular. I also love his his sense of layouts within the panel. And you can really see it on the last splash page where we see Old Man Logan with the hound marks on his face, the way he's got Hank McCoy in the foreground cradling Rachel Gray. It's a very compelling image. Like, you can tell, you pick up the comic and just look at this one image, you almost don't even need any dialogue in the fight scene when the hounds arrive. Just this is enough to realize, oh crap, the hounds are here. I can see Scott's knocked out. I can see Rachel Gray's knocked out. And I can see that Hank McCoy, this young version of Hank McCoy, knows he's in deep, deep trouble. So anytime that you can eliminate words and you're able to tell a story just with the picture, to me, that's a sign of a really, really great artist. So, and the other thing is, there's a lot of characters in this book to draw. So the fact that he's been on both issues so far, and I haven't heard anything about any other artists filling in to help him out. So kudos to Pepe, because that's not an easy thing to do when there's this many characters in the book. He must be working his tail off. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. Also, the colors by Marte Garcia are done exceptionally well. It's a very bright book, but the colors aren't like super primary or anything. So he does tend to use a lot of shading or more subdued palette, not a lot of really bright, vibrant colors, more pastel. And it suits both the kind of menace, the overall kind of dread we feel for the X-Men with everything that's going on with them, the dangers and the fact that some of them have been killed. And also all the, like the body slide stuff, anytime there's any powers being used, it really jumps off the page with the way Marte's handling the colors. So I wanted to make sure that he got a shout out as well. So yeah, I can't wait for issue 3. I think this has been an incredible series so far. Really glad I picked it up. Thank Mark Brooks for that, for his incredible covers. You know, I'm a huge Mark Brooks fan. He's been on the show numerous times, and I always support Mark. And he's so great to his fans too. But yeah, I always support Mark and buy, if he does the cover, most likely I'm going to buy the book. And I've been trying to get back into the X-Men corner of the universe. So I thought, well, I'm picking up these books anyway because of these great Mark Brooks covers. Red Phoenix Resurrection with Matthew Rosenberg, thought that was great. And I know Rosenberg and Ed Brisson, who's writing this series, are two of the writers that are going to relaunch Uncanny X-Men. So, you know, even though I'm missing a big chunk out of my X-Men history, and I will get there someday and fill it in by reading all that great stuff, why not dive right back in right now with this Extermination series? Because I know it's going to set up everything going forward and resolve once and for all, or I should say resolve for now, because it's comics, so who knows what a subsequent writer will do. But resolve for now, there's two versions of each X-Men, because we have the young versions here in our present time. Let's get this resolved, and I really think it's going to kind of clean up the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe going forward, and then maybe I can just stick with it and keep reading forward and then go back and fill in the gaps when I have time. That's the plan anyway. All right. Well, once again, I want to thank everybody for joining us. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. The next show I'll be at for sure is Comic-Con LA, Halloween weekend, Los Angeles, California. Wish I had an answer about New York Comic-Con. I should have an answer for you later this week. But if you're going to be at LA Comic Con, since I know for sure I'm going to be there, please let me know. I always love to meet up with listeners, hang out, talk comics, hook you up with a free Comic Source lanyard, all that kind of good stuff. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.